Saturday, July 23rd, was a great roaring day covering three states. It's hard to describe it because it is a montage of faces, changing kaleidoscope of activities. And by 1 a.m., when it is all over, you are so weary that everything has somehow melted together. In the morning, I went with Lyndon to dedicate the AmVets building. Speaker McCormick and I unveiled the bronze bust of him that Jimmalou Mason had done, and I saw her seated in the front row. There, Lyndon gathered up Senator Yarbrough without any pre-planning, and off he went with us on Air Force One with a delegation that included, or during the day picked up, Governors Brannigan of Indiana, Kerner of Illinois, Breathitt of Kentucky, Senators By and Hartke of Indiana, John Sherman Cooper and Thurston Morton of Kentucky, and Douglas of Illinois, and a great array of congressmen. We landed at Indianapolis, where because the airport was under construction, there was not supposed to be any crowd, but thousands had gathered. And then to downtown Indianapolis, where a crowd estimated at 42,000 filled a huge circle and poured out into the streets that radiated into it, and in the middle, a great dominating monument at the base of which Lyndon spoke, a sea of faces, sign saying, "We love Lucy," a wedding bell with Lucy and Pat on it, "We're backing you on Vietnam," "We have a date in 68, and in the distance a sign, "Vance speaks for us," and you wonder just what that means. Then on to the Indianapolis Athletic Club, where Lyndon attended a stag luncheon for some 475 men, hosted by the very conservative newspaper magnate, Mr. Pulliam, whom Senator Douglas described as a snake charmer. And this is one of the anomalies of the day. Lyndon comes with the enthusiastic support at the urging of this very conservative publisher, bringing with him in tow Senator Yarbrough of Texas and seeking the re-election of Senator Paul Douglas. I went to another room to a luncheon for ladies given by Mrs. Brannigan, sweet, pretty, gentle, who had herself brought the delicious cookies that were our dessert. Alas, one never gets to eat enough when one is the guest of honor. You can hardly lower your face churlishly over your plate and gulp when people are coming up every second. Shake hands or ask for your autograph or say, "Do you remember when?" Lyndon strode in and made the ladies a little speech. Mrs. Brannigan presented Lucy with a lovely Paul Revere bowl from the people of the state of Indiana, and she, bless her, made a charming rejoinder. And then we were off for Fort Campbell, Kentucky. On the way, Lyndon took off his clothes and slept for about 45 minutes, just by will. Fort Campbell was to me the most memorable scene of the day. The papers summed it up. At Fort Campbell, the president observed some training tactics, awarded medals to 22 veterans of the 101st Division returned from Vietnam, saw weapons captured in Vietnam, and spoke proudly as commander-in-chief. But the things I remember, those helicopters coming in at treetop height, in lines as precise as ballet dancers, the swiftness with which men debarked from them, picked up others right where the big pink flares had been left burning, and were off in a second. This was a simulated attack. It was thrilling and frightening, and you felt proud of their training and skill. And I remember the huge parachute, mottled green and brown as camouflage in the jungle, which was used to drop material like a truck, and under it the press were clattering away with their typewriters. And somewhere among the 28 or so thousand people that were assembled, I remember a sign that said, "Tell Warrilyn hello, I'm her aunt." And I remember the sense of embarrassment I felt when I tried to speak to the wounded men in wheelchairs. They have given so much. I remember it was raining, and Lyndon walked in one direction shaking hands, and Lucy in another, and I in another. And then it was time to fly on, and once more Lyndon took off his clothes and had another nap of about 40 minutes. This is what I would call a four-shirt day. Each time after speeches he is wringing wet, and at least four times today changed shirts. This time we went by Convair to Lawrenceville, Illinois for an airport rally. Once more, thousands of people in this heartland of America that's not supposed to be our territory. Only once did I think I saw an unfriendly sign. I believe it had the words President Goldwater. We drove across 10 miles of lovely open country. They say it's been a drought. The corn was beautiful. The wheat had just been harvested, and the fields were a crew-cut gold. Beautiful, rich farmland, comfortable-looking houses. At Vincennes, one of the most historic towns in the state, we went to the George Rogers Clark National Historical Park on the banks of the Wabash River. There was a crowd of 40 or so thousand people, and Lyndon talked about Vietnam, urging Americans to stop, look, and listen as you hear the voices talking about what's wrong with your country. Beware of the speakers and columnists who have been critical of the war. He said he doubted that many commentators would lecture them about bombings by the North Vietnamese of hospitals for American servicemen in South Vietnam. It just could be, he added, that the other side has made some mistakes too. Lucy was seated next to me, and then Senator Hartke. I began to notice him. All of the guests on the platform would applaud, and a great part of the crowd. There he sat, his hands quietly in his lap, his face impassive. Finally, I began to lean forward or backward and look straight at him, just to make sure that he was never applauding anything. At long last, as the master of ceremonies, Governor Brannigan, came to the end of the program, he remembered to introduce his wife. And here Senator Hartke, belatedly and rather flabbily, clapped his hands two or three times, its only approval of the day. Once more, we were on the plane to Louisville for an airport rally, and then to Jeffersonville, Indiana, by motorcade, to present a beautification award to the post office. By this time, we were over an hour late, and it was past 9 o'clock. They steered me around the post office so that the photographers could get pictures of us admiring the shrubs and ornamental trees. He's so sweet about wanting to point up anything useful I've done. And here, on his ninth speech of the day, he threw the text aside and launched into his best campaigning style. He felt that bond build up between him and his audience. And though they'd been waiting for him probably 2 hours, and it was close to 10, and he talked 30 minutes, they loved it, and it was a thrilling end to the day. He quoted John Steinbeck about, "They want us to stop bombing, but they're only talking about half a war. I want to talk about the whole war." It cheered the most when he said, "It may be old-fashioned, but I still believe that my country does most things right." A mournful foghorn sounded from the Ohio River as Lyndon shouted out his gospel, Julius Duche's phrase, and over they applauded and urged him on. For the first time in a long time, I wrote out one of my little notes, "Great speech, but time to stop." But just then, and at the right time, he did. We motorcaded back to Louisville, and the plane, this time, I did not stop to shake hands anymore. Always the rest of the day, Lucy in one direction, and I in another, we had used every moment with the crowds at the airport. "Thank you for coming out to meet us. You've sure got beautiful farmland here. Somebody as little as you better be careful in this crowd." To a lady on crutches, "You sure are brave to try this." To one of the thousands taking pictures, "I do that myself. It's hard to get 'em when your target keeps on moving." "And what do they say?" "We're praying for you. Tell your husband we believe in him. I'm from Texas. We're kinfolks of Mike Manitos, or Leonard Dreyer, or somebody who works for us." All the millions of little ties that bind a man in public life with the people he tries to serve. One might say it's a shallow, meaningless experience. For me, it's curiously elating, and I guess it's as simple as this. If they like me, I like them and want to show it. Then we were back in the plane for the last time, very weary. Time to settle down over drinks and trade experiences of the day. The assembled senators and congressmen. Thoughts that surfaced to me. Charming group of little Head Start children, all clean and starched and big-eyed in front of the athletic club in Indianapolis with their teacher, Miss Thompson, to present me with flowers. I'd kneeled in order to be their height, to accept them, the flowers, and to ask each of them questions about what they did at Head Start. I'd heard they'd visited the zoo and the library and a farm. What did they like best? And then a funny sign that a little boy kept on carrying at Vincennes until we finally stopped to meet him. It said, "I have a picture of you made by a typewriter." And then, hilariously, Senator Yarbrough, with his pants legs split from mid-thigh to below the knee and rather clumsily sewed together by himself with needle and thread he'd borrowed by just going up to a porch full of folks listening to one of Lyndon's speeches and asking the lady of the house if she could help him in his predicament. We all felt rather excited, and I very satisfied and very proud of Lyndon, but it was only then that I heard what I believe was the most important speech of the day, the one that he'd made at the Stag Luncheon, when I saw the papers and asked him about them. He said, "Riots must stop. Our country cannot abide civil violence. Such riots start a chain reaction, the consequences of which fall most heavily on those who begin them. Riots in the streets do not bring about lasting reforms. They tear at the very fabric of the community. They set neighbor against neighbor and create walls of mistrust and fear between them. They make reform more difficult by turning away the very people who can and must support reform." High time, he said it. Very strong and very needed. It had been a great, varied day. And this, to me, added the final ingredient. It was 1 o'clock when we reached the White House, and Lucy, who's been so sleepless lately, looked very weary, but we were all on that sort of peak of excitement which made sleep hard to woo, and it was 2 o'clock when I fell asleep, feeling infinitely proud of Lyndon, of his spirit and his strength and his determination against the odds that face him.